But it all comes down to saying this community should have a say in what happens to this community. And then we need to work to elect the people into those local levels who are in alignment with our values. Because if we have people aligned with our values in local government, nothing but great things can come from having local control, because that community is having a very direct say, whether it's the township or the county, in what happens in their area and how their community is operating.
Welcome to the 341st installment of Ear to the Ground, the Land Stewardship Project's podcast on family farming, regenerative agriculture, community food systems, and local democracy. I'm Brian DeVore, editor of the Land Stewardship Letter. As the old saying goes, all politics is local. In rural America, that's particularly true on the, well, local level. Over the years, LSP members have seen firsthand how township boards, county supervisors, soil and water conservation districts, and other local decision-making bodies can have a direct impact on the land, Main Street businesses, and all the people who live and make a living in farming communities. Local government impacts a lot of day-to-day machinations in a rural community. From how much gravel to apply to all those side roads farms rely on, to whether the zoning rules can be bent to accommodate a new construction project. But it's also become clear in recent years that if we think creatively about local government's role, it can have a major positive influence on the long-term future of a community and things like water quality, local farm and food economies, and the building of resilient, healthy soil. Lately, Emily Mingy has been thinking a lot about just how influential local government is in the lives of farmers and other rural residents. Emily is a political organizer for LSP, and she spends much of her time working with the Land Stewardship Action Fund, the political organizing partner of our organization. LSP is a 501c3 nonprofit organization, which means we cannot get involved in electoral politics. But a few years ago, it became clear that there was only so much progress we could make on policy reform if there wasn't a way to influence who the decision makers were in government. LSP members, leaders, and allies could no longer sit on the sidelines in the current political environment, but instead needed to proactively engage in elections so that folks have a say in who's representing them. As a result, in 2018, the Land Stewardship Project's Board of Directors created the Land Stewardship Action Fund. Known as LSAF for short, this is a 501c4 organization, which means it can get involved in electoral politics by, among other things, endorsing certain candidates for office. As a political organizer, it's Emily's job to figure out what issues are important to our members and allies, and how LSAF can help advance those policies through the support of certain candidates and the building of power through the electoral process. As part of this work, during the past several months, Emily and other organizers have held numerous conversations with rural people who live in various parts of Minnesota. One thing that's become clear recently is that while state and federal politics are important, it's local decision-making that has some of the most immediate impacts on people's lives. And it's also on the local level people feel they have the most influence, whether it be as a voter, a candidate for office, or a participant in a community meeting on a particular issue. That's why LSAF is currently increasingly focusing on local elections for everything from township officers and county supervisors to members of soil and water conservation district boards. I recently sat down with Emily to talk about why we should be paying attention to who runs local government and ways people can get more involved in influencing such decision-making bodies, or, when needed, changing who's sitting on those boards in the first place. We also discuss examples of how taking a creative view of the role local government can play in what a community prioritizes offers an exciting glimpse at ways of creating a more resilient future for the land, our farms, and Main Street economies. We're currently, Land Stewardship Project's in the midst of developing its next five-year plan. And going through the, we did listening sessions, we also did surveys with members and allies, and really gathered a lot of information for this that's going into this plan. One of the things that struck me was our members, one of the priorities they would like to see LSP to continue working on and to emphasize even more in the future is policy change. Great. So we're doing that. We have a policy program. We have Land Stewardship Action Fund that's working on these issues. But it also became clear that people didn't quite get the connection sometimes to some of this more political work or some of this organizing that needs to be done around that and policy change. That kind of surprised me. I mean, does that surprise you? Is that something that you've run into?
It doesn't surprise me because even historically, if we look at LSP, you know, we were started as a more of a policy focus back in the 80s. The programmatic work has really grown and become a huge staple and center of the work that we do here. But I think, you know, we look back and people who have often come in through our programs work, through Farm Beginnings, soil health groups, sometimes we've struggled to get them involved in policy work, right? There is this disconnect even between creating the change on the land that we're looking to see and passing the policy that we need. That disconnect we've seen starkly throughout our history and our organizing. And I think we're doing a lot better on that now. I think we've made a lot of progress in connecting those issues with folks and drawing those mental dots between the necessity of policy to advance the programmatic work. So I kind of view this as like the next phase of that, right? We've gotten people more comfortable with the idea of advocating for policy, lobbying, talking to their legislator, but now it's that next step of engaging in elections, right? So it kind of feels like this natural trend that we've seen before. Our elections, for a while and even more so now, they are polarized and they're partisan, yeah. And they are getting more and more so. And so I think people have a lot of fear around elections in general, not just around Land Stewardship Action Fund and LSP engaging in that space through the Action Fund. I think in general, people are a little bit turned off by elections, by elected officials, by candidates, and I get that. I completely understand. And so I think people have a fear about LSP getting involved in elections through the Action Fund because it might feed into some of this division and divisiveness that we see on a national and international level, or even within our state as well. And since LSP has historically engaged folks who have varying political backgrounds, while LSAF, the Action Fund, can be partisan, we've always talked about how we are nonpartisan. We do have people of varying political backgrounds, and so I think people get really worried about turning off certain people or dividing our base by endorsing or supporting a specific candidate or candidates that probably are also endorsed by a specific political party, right? That's one of the reasons why people, I don't know if it's that they don't see the connection, but I think that there's just that fear around elections and what that could bring with it, right? With the partisan and divisiveness that we've seen. So I guess it doesn't surprise me, but also at the same time, we know how important it is to have the people in office to champion that as well.
Well, to me, a real specific example that I've seen recently is we have a soil health program, mm-hmm. that promotes soil health practices and had a lot of good luck with that. We've created these networks of farmers who are sharing this information. But we found that there is a point where there's a limit to how much they can transition into some of these practices because, for example, the Farm Bill penalizes you for diversifying or for using certain practices or put some barriers in place there. So on the state level anyway, we've been able to, because we've had certain folks who are at the legislature who support some of these practices, get in place some funding to help farmers transition into something like building soil health.
Exactly. And that's how I've always kind of viewed Land Stewardship Project and then the Action Fund in relation is, you know, we've got the base of this whole old school food pyramid, right, is our members. That's the base of the pyramid there is our membership and our actual base. And then we go into the programmatic work. You know, we have the folks who are interacting with the farmers who are working on the land to put our vision into practice, right, and to make it a reality. But we can't make our vision a reality if we don't have the policy in place that supports it, right, whether that's through a farm bill, through state policy or local policy as well and regulations. We can't actually put that vision into practice. But we also can't pass the policy that we need for the vision if we don't have the people in office that are going to want to champion that. You know, I think we do an incredible job with our lobbying work and engaging elected officials, but there's really only so far that you're going to be able to get with certain elected officials. Mm-hmm. I think because of, like we just talked about, that kind of division and partisanship within politics right now, people aren't necessarily looking always to collaborate or engage in conversation that doesn't align with their, you know, quote unquote party values.
So in a recent issue of the Land Stewardship Letter, you wrote about how Land Stewardship Action Fund is recently started to focus a little bit more on local government, impacts on the local government level. And one of the things that came out of, one of the reasons that that kind of focus or maybe refocus a little bit on the local, it came out of, I guess you had some conversations with folks around the state and talked to them about that. Talk a little bit more about some of those conversations and kind of what we mean by, how is this different maybe than what would have been the focus before a little bit?
Yeah, so prior to this year, Land Stewardship Action Fund has only ever supported or endorsed candidates at the statewide level or the state house or senate level. And I think this year, you know, I've been having a lot of conversations with folks all over the state who have been involved with different aspects of LSP's work to kind of understand, how do they interact with government and with elected officials most? How do they see that impacting their life in the most like direct, immediate way? And I think there are a few reasons why local really stood out to me, and something that I really advocated for us to focus on this year is, one, you know, what we were just touching on is local is not associated with any specific party. When you look at county government or township government, it's nonpartisan. And I think that is going to allow LSAF to get out of some of those spaces where people are associating us with a party or calling us partisan, because we can just be looking at candidates based on their values, which is what we're doing anyway. We don't have to worry about those labels. So I think it kind of allows us to explore that space a little bit more, which I think is going to be really valuable for us and for our membership and our base. I think it's going to allow more people, whether it's from the programs work or the policy work, to actually see themselves in this work and feel more connected to it. You know, I talk to a lot of people who are interested in who's running for their soil water conservation district or their county commissioner, but they don't want to talk about the presidential race at all, which is fair. Mm-hmm. I hardly do either. So I think that it does allow for more people to feel connected to this work, for us to kind of occupy a space that more people in our base are excited by. I also think that people in rural communities, from what I've been hearing in the conversations I've been having, just feel more connected to their local government. Maybe they're already in conversation or relationship with their county commissioners, their township board supervisors, their soil water conservation district supervisor as well. They know these people serving in these governments. Maybe they've used SWCD programs, or they've had to talk to the county board about a zoning ordinance they were looking at. They see it as part of their community. They don't see it as this big level of government that feels untouchable or intangible to them. It's part of their community. And I also think that local government, and we can get into this more, but it has such a big ability to have an impact on our farm and food system. Yeah. You know, yes, there is the Farm Bill and there's state policy that really directs a lot of funding in certain ways, but then it's these local electeds and appointed officials who are actually distributing that funding, right? Whether it's for land use or water, they are the ones who are working in direct relationship with farmers to distribute the funding and to help implement the different practices and programs. And I think they do just have more direct interaction with farmers as well. They're out in the field with them, talking to them, understanding what the needs of the farming community and the other rural community members are. And I also think that, yeah, kind of like I was mentioning, the local levels hold a lot of purse strings as well. You know, there's a lot of federal and state money that is passed. And then, like, we look at the American Rescue Act or any of the big COVID relief funding packages, a lot of that went to counties and townships to then distribute to folks in their, you know, county or township. And it was then the Economic Development Authority boards that were receiving applications from residents in the community for what they wanted to do with that. So having people in those spaces who are actually getting that funding and then being able to just distribute it is really impactful as well.
Yeah, and you alluded to this, but can you give a couple examples of how decisions on that local level have affected the work LSP does?
Yeah, so, I mean, there are some really big examples that we can get into for how local government has impacted LSP's work. But, I mean, you know, look at Southeast Minnesota, and we look at, you know, the animal unit cap that was passed and then enforced in Winona County. Mm-hmm. That was because that's a county animal unit cap, right? That was because the county commissioners and the planning and zoning commission there passed that animal unit cap. They said that this is what we think is best for our community based on the conversations we're having with residents of Winona County. Mm-hmm. Then you also look at the frac sand ban. Yeah. That was an entirely local issue, a Winona County specific issue. And we've seen other ordinances and caps for animal units passed at township levels as well, with the township supervisor saying that this is what we need in this specific locality. We've also seen this, though, with land use zoning buffers around for any farmland or by roadways or also by any water systems. Buffers are completely locally controlled. We've seen different variances, too, if someone wants a variance for example, like multifamily farming or dwellings, multiple dwelling units on a farm, they would need a variance as well often. So that's all goes through local government. So anything about like land use and zoning within their locality, they have control over and they have a say in. We've also seen actually proactive. Mm-hmm. You know, we've seen so many proactive measures too. And out in Western Minnesota, one of our staff, Scott DeMuth and Amy Bacciaclupo, are really working with some of the Western Minnesota County Economic Development Authority boards about investing in local food systems. Mm-hmm. You know, they have money. The EDAs have money often to work with. So it's about making sure that you're having those conversations to say, can this money go toward processing or creating a food hub or connecting farmers to markets or investing in a farm to school program or coordinator. So that's a huge way to a proactive way that we're creating the food system we want, not just fighting against the things that pop up. But it's important for both. It's something that LSP has always tried to kind of work on some narrative around the importance of local control, because local control is not a partisan issue. Mm-hmm. We've actually seen some organizations that we've been in partnership with on other issues be more opposed to local control because of, you know, some of the social issues that have come up on local levels. For example, like a book ban, something that wouldn't necessarily be in alignment with LSP's values. That is something that came out of a local control fight because it's the local school boards that say we can ban books in our jurisdiction, right? So it's not a partisan issue, but it all comes down to saying this community should have a say in what happens to this community, right? And then we need to work to elect the people into those local levels, whether that is school board or county or township, who are in alignment with our values. Because if we have people aligned with our values in local government, nothing but great things can come from having local control, because that community is having a very direct say, whether it's the township or the county, in what happens in their area and how their community is operating. So yeah, it's been huge and something that LSP has done a lot of like narrative work around too, to show people why it's so important.
It's interesting on how all these things tie together. One of the big issues that's kind of dominated southeastern Minnesota in the past almost going on a year now, but maybe at least 6 months, is nitrate contamination. It's been a big issue for a long time, but it's gotten more attention recently. The EPA has stepped in, and partly because of a petition LSP and some other organizations sent to the EPA asking them to address nitrate pollution, which the vast majority of it's being traced to runoff from agricultural systems there. But one of the things that ties into that is, I know you've talked about situation in Fillmore County, which is in southeast Minnesota. It's in the heart of karst country. And there's some residents there, some LSP members and some other folks who are pretty concerned that the local county government took the opposite approach of what maybe they thought should be done as far as dealing with this. Yeah. This problem. Can you talk a little bit about that? I think that's a good example of folks, they realized, oh, we really do have to have some impact on what's happening on this local level, because this is going in the wrong direction here.
And I think it's also a really good example of why it's important to have a say in who you're electing, whether that's, you know, recruiting candidates or just working to support candidates that are in alignment with your values. So yes, it was about a year and a half ago, I think, that there was a proposal to double Fillmore County's animal unit cap. It was at 2,000. The proposal was to double it to 4,000. LSP and others, Responsible Ag and Karst Country, came together and, you know, said, we're not in alignment with this. We don't agree with doubling the animal unit cap. One, we already have a nitrate problem in our drinking water. And two, we're in karst country, which means that any runoff is affecting people's drinking water all over the state. But in karst topography down in southeast Minnesota, it's just that much more vulnerable. It's why we see the nitrate levels that we do down there. So they didn't agree. And I think we had a petition, I forget exactly how many signatures, but I want to say around 300 signatures collected on this petition. We had massive numbers of people showing up to these county commissioner hearings and meetings, and the board unanimously voted to pass the to double the cap, to pass it. And people were really upset. And I think that, you know, having a huge petition, large numbers of people showing up, and yes, of course, people showing up in support of doubling the cap too. That's not to say those were the only voices they were hearing. And then have the board just not even give it a second thought and just double the cap. It really frustrated people, and it showed them that, you know, we can do all we can do, and we still might not win,
right?
We do need to have a say in who's actually in these offices if we want to be passing or not passing the policy that supports our community. So that was a really big example of them realizing that, like, it's not just about organizing and petitions and that type of, like, lobbying effort. It also needs to be about the electoral piece of it, too.
Well, on the more proactive side...
their neighbor to the north.
Their neighbor to the north in Olmsted County, again, it was a different approach dealing with the nitrate contamination issue and some of the other water quality issues. I think this is a really interesting example of local government coming together with a local kind of government entity or agency in the form of the Soil and Water Conservation District. I remember talking to a member of the Board of Supervisors who pushed this program. He's a well driller, very concerned about water quality. Boy, it's almost like a textbook example of local government taking the initiative, working with local farmers, local agency, and local natural resource professionals. Anyway, talk about that example. I think that's another good example of why we can have a really positive impact on the local level. It should also be said that because this program has been so successful, it's being considered as maybe doing it as a pilot program for the entire state.
Yeah. So I actually think that this program, this example in Olmsted County, is one of the reasons why we are looking at Soil Water Conservation District elections this fall. You know, we were thinking about county as well, and you know, that's still, of course, very important, but we saw this example and how impactful it's been in Olmsted County with already tangible nitrate reductions in the drinking water. We realized that we need to get people into these SWCD levels who want to be innovative and creative the way that Olmsted County was. It's not just about, you know, I talk to a lot of people now about their SWCD supervisors, and I say, how are they doing? What's it like? And they're like, I think it's fine. I'm like, yeah, I'm sure it's fine. They're probably not doing anything wrong, right? But what more could they be doing? So I think with Olmsted County is, yeah, you mentioned it was one of the county commissioners, I think, who, yeah, is a well driller and just said, hey, I see a problem. And I'm in a position to, you know, start a conversation about this, maybe do something about it. So I believe he went to the rest of the board, but then also to the SWCD board and the staff and said, let's figure out something. Let's figure out a solution to this. And one thing that's pretty unique about the Olmsted County model that we would have to figure out if we were to expand this out into the state is they used funds from, I believe it was the American Rescue Act. So it was not state funding from Bowser. So that had a ton of flexibility. They were able to use those funds in whatever way they wanted. They didn't have to have the same results or deliverables that Bowser might require, the state might require for their funding program. So they had that flexibility, which was great, but they have people on the board that wanted to be creative and innovative. And they also had staff. You know, we have Martin Larson, who's, you know, on staff with the Olmsted Soil Water Conservation District. Shona Langseth, who used to work here at LSP, is on staff with the SWCD there as well. And it's people who really know, are in communication and understand farming in the area, or are farmers, such as Martin is. And they were like, what actually works? You know, not just what are we doing, what have we done? Yeah, we've got the Minnesota Ag Water Quality Certification Program. We've got these various, you know, cover crop programs. But what actually works? And so they looked at both results-based payments, so getting money up front for implementing practices, but then also you get more money if you let your cover crops grow to a certain height, as opposed to just planting cover crops. You get more money for layering different practices too. The more that you layer, the additional funding that you get. And I think that they really were innovative and creative with it, and they've seen results come from that. And so I think it takes people in these local levels who don't just want to continue the status quo, right? You know, if we look at township, everyone says, oh yeah, township, roads and bridges. And I'm like, yes, however, right? Like, right. What more can they be doing? There is so much more that falls in their jurisdiction and that they have the ability to do besides roads and bridges or just, you know, traditional soil water conservation district programs. And so I think it's about having people in those offices that actually want to work with land stewardship project, work with farmers, and come up with solutions.
Mm-hmm. And there's a couple things going on there. One is you mentioned federal money helped fund this program. If a federal agency had come in and said, we're going to put this program in place here in Olmsted County, it just wouldn't have flown as well. I mean, this was local folks saying, this is the way we're going to use this federal money kind of thing.
They understand their community too, right? Like if we think about Olmsted or Fillmore County down in southeast Minnesota, the geography looks so different than it does up, you know, by Moorhead or in kind of the Central Sands area that also has nitrate contamination issues because they have sandy soil. And so runoff just goes right through the sand into the groundwater. There are issues with drinking water all over, but you have to understand the local dynamics with both the political nature of that area and the geographical nature too, to really figure out what the solutions that are going to work are.
I think the other thing about that that's really interesting is there's always a foundation there or a background that people don't see right off the bat. And one of them is if that county supervisor had gone to the SWCD and said, we need to figure out a way to support farmers in using practices that cut nitrate to contamination and put in place some of these regenerative ag practices. And there wasn't in place already a group of farmers who had proven it could be done. Mm-hmm. I don't know how far that would have went. And that is an example of for about a half a dozen years before that, LSP had been working in that area.
Yep.
There were farmers who had shown this can be done on a practical basis. This isn't just something that some expert from far away said, yeah, this is the way you can reduce it, and then it doesn't work in that particular area and that climate and that kind of soils. And so it's a really good and I know when they went to develop this program, farmers had input. This is what's practical. This is what works. This is what won't work. This is what will provide the incentive. So there's that. It's a good example of LSP's work that we're doing on the ground with farmers. Boy, when it almost like sets the tone or sets the foundation for when there is some good policy that can be brought along, can be the thing that kind of ignites that a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that, you know, when I think about our electoral work and Land Stewardship Action Fund's work, you know, I think about where do we already have a base and presence? Where are people already organizing and where do we have leaders trying new things, having these conversations that we can leverage too? You know, it's not Land Stewardship Action Fund's role to just go into key districts and try and flip a seat or switch, you know, who's in office because, I don't know, it's a target area. But where do we already have people who are organizing and who have these innovative ideas? I think Fillmore County is a great example of that too, that we have amazing leaders who have been trying out different practices and who have been organizing and in this work for a long time, you know, similarly to Olmsted. You know, and so I like to think about where are people already doing this work, such as Western Minnesota, where they're doing the work around local foods and creating this food hub, and how do we then bring that conversation into the levels of government as well and changing what the local electeds are working on.
So what are the challenges that folks face in getting involved with their local government, either running for office or just having some kind of influence on who's kind of involved with the local government on the local level?
Yeah, so there are a few ways that there are challenges or that people struggle with this or face challenges. One, there's the accessibility. I think that people don't often know when their county board is meeting. They don't know, definitely don't know when their township board is meeting, mm-hmm. when the soil water conservation districts are meeting. That information, you know, counties are bigger, so they tend to have websites and a lot of minutes are posted on there or board meetings, but a lot of townships don't have websites. And there's no way for people to know what's on the agenda, what was talked about, when the meeting is going to be. They can reach out to maybe the township clerk mm-hmm. and they get that information. But there is an accessibility piece in just understanding when the meetings are happening, that they are open to the public, what's going to be on the agenda. Maybe there's something on the agenda that you really care about, but you had no idea they were making a decision on. So I think there's that piece too of just the accessibility. There's also the timing. You know, I remember talking to one of our members in Olmsted County who she serves on the Township Planning and Zoning Commission. And they had to change their meeting times because they were all during the day. And, you know, people who are younger, who maybe are retired, who are working 9-to-5 jobs can't do that. But then, you know, then if it's in the evening, people who have kids struggle with it too. So there's really, I mean, all that to say there is no perfect time, mm-hmm. right? What if we had virtual options? You know, so I think there's a timing and an accessibility piece. I think that there's also just that political education of what do these levels of government do or have the decision-making power over? You know, people might not want to think about going to their township meeting because they're like, well, roads and bridges, right? But there is so much more that they can be talking about and deciding on that you would want to have a say in too. Mm-hmm. So I think just that political education and once we get people connecting their daily life, their lived experiences to the decisions that local government is making, even if that's about roads or bridges or stoplights or, you know, traffic, that is still something that they are dealing with on a daily basis. And we can get them motivated and mobilized to engage with these local electeds as well. So there's that political education piece that I really have a lot of interest and passion around it expanding. And then I think when you mentioned kind of challenges in running for local office is, you know, I like to say that local elections are, yes, they're less partisan and therefore less political in some ways, but they're also more political in some ways too, right? Because, you know, maybe your county commissioner or your SWCD supervisor, they're your neighbor. Right. You go to church with them, yeah. Or you, like, you know, maybe you're related to them too. There are so many ways
they
that you...
They run the only repair shop
in
town.
Yeah, exactly. You don't know. Like, they're your hay guy. That's what I know Pam, my coworker on the policy team, has talked about, her hay guy.
Yeah.
And so you inherently are just more likely to be connected to these folks in a personal way, mm-hmm. right? You know, I remember talking to a member who's been a member for a long time, really active, outspoken, engaged. She's down in Southeast Minnesota as well. And she had thought about running. I think it was for her township board at one point. And I asked her, I was like, well, why didn't you? And she was like, honestly, I was scared. And this is someone who I'm like, you're scared? Like, I can't believe that you are having fear around this. But it does make sense, right? Because when these are your neighbors and people that, like, your daily life depends on in some ways, mm-hmm. and you decide to challenge them or their friend or somebody else on the board, that it could rock boats.
Yeah.
And I think people get really worried. It's one thing to rock a boat at a state house level or a state level because that's kind of the nature of politics.
Right.
But when it becomes so personal at a local level, it almost becomes more political.
Yeah.
And it's hard for people, I think, to take that step when they're worried about the waves it might cause.
Yeah.
It takes continually asking people, and it takes examples of how we can do this, especially in rural communities. I don't think people have many examples of how we've changed local power dynamics.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people on township boards, county boards, and SWCD boards have been in those seats or in those seats for a long time. And people are like, well, that person's just there. You know, so they don't even know how you change that, right? So what we're trying to do is create some models and examples for how you change people at a local or change elected officials at a local level. And what I would love to see is multiple people running for each of these seats because they're important, right? We had a session earlier this year about SWCDs and why they're important and why the elected officials are important. And we had a couple people who are current SWCD supervisors as panelists on it. And one of them, his name's Greg, and he's up in kind of west central Minnesota. And he was like, challenge me. Yes, I like being a soil water conservation district supervisor, but what I wouldn't love to be to not be in an uncontested race, you know, in 2 years, because these are important seats. They have a lot that they can do.
Mm-hmm.
And so more people should be running for these. So I think that the more we can just kind of show examples of that and get people connected to why they're important. I do think that SWCD is maybe an easier in than county board, for
mm-hmm.
example, because it is very focused on soil water,
right?
As opposed to all of the various things that a county board might have to be looking at. So that's you know, kind of finding those entry points, asking people repeatedly, showing them the connections, and just giving examples too and highlighting how this can be done. So how do we make someone feel so connected to the decisions happening? Because those decisions are connected to them. They just might not always see that connection right away. So yeah, so I think it's really about drawing those parallels. A lot of the political education, as I mentioned before, awareness of when these boards are meeting. So maybe you decided not to run this year, but what if you started attending SWCD meetings or going to events, meeting with your supervisor and understanding what they're doing in that role? I think that any and all of that that LSAF can be doing this year and moving forward is just going to encourage more people to see themselves in these roles. Because I think at the end of the day, regardless of if it's, you know, township or federal level, we don't see ourselves as elected officials. We often don't see ourselves as, you know, political leaders,
right. But
we are.
So I guess going forward here, what's the Land Stewardship Action Fund looking at to try to help make it possible for folks to have that positive influence in their local decision-making bodies? I mean, what are some of the things you have planned? What are some of the conversations you've been having? And what are you looking at?
Yeah, so what we have planned this year is we have a few different overarching ways that we're going to be working. And one of them is really leaning into relational organizing, because especially when it comes to local elections, relationships matter, and they matter the most in influencing people and how they decide to act or engage in an election. So really focusing on getting our folks to be those messengers, to engage with their community. We want to do leadership development work too, and that is in leadership with the candidates themselves, encouraging people in our base to run. It's leadership development in people stepping up to plan community events, engage with their neighbors, bring folks together, create more community. We are doing candidate endorsements this year. We'll be looking at the different Soil Water Conservation District candidates around the state, specifically in some target areas, and having community events where we bring our base together, not just our members, but those who align with our values, and engage with these candidates and have a conversation, and they can actually give their input of, here's what I heard, here's what I think, here's who I think will work with me as a constituent and with, you know, my values with Land Stewardship Project moving forward. So doing those endorsements and giving people kind of that power and autonomy to have a say in their election. And then we're looking just to do a lot of communications and spreading the word about the importance of county and township and soil water conservation districts. So I know I mentioned this already, but, you know, political education is huge for me. And I think especially when it comes to these local levels is, you know, who's on your board right now? Maybe all the races this year are uncontested, but can you meet with those folks then? You know, there's nobody running against them, but get coffee with your supervisor and talk to them about why they got into this, what you are worried about, your main concerns, your values. You know, attend meetings if, you know, just to kind of understand what that looks like too. Be there, be a presence, and talk with others about this as well. And then, you know, doing everything that I can do to spread information about what these levels of government, these bodies of government do, you know, what they have the ability to do, what they have decision-making power over, I think is going to be really big to draw those connections like we were just saying. But I want people to feel connected to local elections, and I want them to feel exciting. I think that community is missing in electoral politics in general. Mm-hmm. We see that at every level of elections, that people don't feel connected to community, especially when you're in rural spaces, you can often feel isolated. So bringing people together. And I am so excited because this summer we will be doing in-person events, whether they're, you know, larger events or just coffees with a few people at a coffee shop with a candidate. We're going to be in person and we're going to be in community and having fun and bringing people together, because politics and local decision making should be fun, right? It's about impacting our lives, bettering them for ourselves, for our neighbors, for, you know, future generations. And yeah, I'm excited to bring some more fun back into that and put the community kind of back into that organizing as well.
For more on the Land Stewardship Action Fund and how to get involved, see the podcast page for Ear to the Ground episode 341 at landstewardshipproject.org. If you have comments or suggestions about this podcast, contact Brian DeVore at bdevore@landstewardshipproject.org, or you can call 612-816-9342. By the way, it helps us greatly if you can give Ear to the Ground a rating on whatever podcast platform you utilize. And word of mouth is the best way to spread the news about our podcast. If you like what you hear, tell at least one person about LSP's Ear to the Ground. Thanks to Laura Borgendale, a Western Minnesota musician, for Ear to the Ground's theme music. And a special thank you to all of Land Stewardship Project's members who make initiatives such as this podcast possible. If you're not a member, visit landstewardshipproject.org to learn how you can support LSP. Thanks for listening.